From the land of Grand University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the ninth day of May 2023. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson. He's at agmarket.net. We'll hear again from Frayne Olson, this time about what farmers can, maybe should do as it's related to marketing new crop corn, especially if they've not gotten very much marketed at this point, and some ideas about how to go about doing that. We'll also hear from Gary Schnitkin, agricultural economist as well. He's at the University of Illinois and traveling with the FarmDoc team across the nation of Brazil. We'll have an audio postcard of sorts from him today. And then as we wrap up our time together, we'll hear a little bit about yesterday's USDA crop progress report, talk with Don Day about the agricultural weather, and discuss what's been happening in the ag energies with Stephen Platt of Archer Financial Services on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
July corn finished at 584 and three quarters, 11 and three quarters lower. September at 519, down 13 and three quarters. New crop December, 11 and a half lower at $5.18 and a quarter. July soybeans, 19 and a half lower at $14.14 and a quarter. August, $13.47 and a half a bushel, down 18 cents. In November, new crop at $12.54 and a half, down 18 cents as well. Bean meal, $7.90 lower. The bean oil for the day, 61 cents lower. Wheat futures for the soft red, down 10 and a half at $6.43 and a half. The hard red at $8.56 and a half. They finished 12 cents higher on the afternoon. Live cattle down, or rather up, $1.50 for the day. Feeder cattle at $3.25 higher, and lean hogs up $1.10. They finished at $84.40. Crude oil, 56 cents a barrel higher at $73.70. The diesel fuel at $2.39 a gallon, a penny and 2 cents higher, and the wholesale price of gasoline today at $2.48. That's a penny and 8 tenths of a cent higher for the afternoon. The Dow Jones Industrial Average now stands just about 2 points higher. Wayne Nelson at agmarket.net now joins us to talk about the marketplace. Wayne, I had not opened these markets until making the phone call to you. It's just busy all day long. What an ugly day it was for the CME Group and the grains and the oil seeds, I suppose.
It's just one of those days, Todd, where it's hard to find something positive to say or to talk about on this show. But, you know, we do need to talk about and see what's going on. So, you know, the commodities continued their fall. You know, slow economic news out there. The price rally from the quarter going to close is sort of fading today. We're not even considering that, and we're, you know, blocking that all up. There's global economic concerns out there now. You know, it's just been rough on most everybody here. You know, we had great planning, 49% on the corn, 35% on the beans. And if you watched our good friend Champagne there, he's telling us we're going to probably get some pretty decent rains here, and we restocked a lot of moisture. So it looks like a great crop coming on, and not a lot with all everything going on in a report on Friday to boot to rally this market today.
Yeah, so Friday we will have the monthly World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimate. This is the first one that will include a new crop S&D table. What are the expectations from the trade?
Well, unfortunately, nobody's looking for a bullish report either, like on that. You know, when we look at the ending stocks for the 22-23 year, you know, you're looking at corn somewhere in the 1.3 to 1.4 bracket on the carryout, and soybeans at 212. You go ahead a year, and you're looking at 2.09 looking for in the carryout in the corn, over 2 billion bushels, and 293 on the beans. So, you know, just some much bigger numbers looking ahead like that. And so it doesn't feel very good like we're going to want to rally the December corn or the November beans very much.
I suppose farmers are at the sideline at the moment, but still willing to go.
Planters have run very hard here like that. I think we'll possibly get back in the field tomorrow. We had very nice rain showers here. A lot to help soften up the soil and get plenty of moisture to bring some of those crops that have been sitting in the ground a long time. So I think we're going to have some very good emergence happen this week. I think that, you know, we're way ahead of what the National is on that. I would say that we're probably 85% done with beans and probably over 75% done with corn so far.
And what are your expectations for the rest of the week before we get to the USDA report? Normally, there's not a lot of volatility, but appears that might not be the case.
Well, you know, after the way we ended the week today, we did get down to some look and bounced off some fairly decent support here today in both corn and the beans. You know, we'd like to think that maybe tomorrow might see just a little bounce back up a little bit. We're not looking for a big up day, but, you know, looking ahead to Friday's numbers, it's going to be awfully hard to rally going into this week.
Hey, thank you much, Wayne.
Thank you, Todd.
That's Wayne Nelson. He is with AgMarket.net.
Hello, this is Gary Schnitke, and we continue our trip in Brazil. On Monday, we were in the southeast part of Mato Grosso and on a farm that was converting pasture and had many cattle to soybean production. And they showed us the process by which they took a degraded pasture and made it into a soybean field. That was very interesting. In the afternoon, we flew to the center part of Mato Grosso where it's much more developed. And there's a lot of soybeans and corn. We were at the Farron Group, which was started by a gentleman who came here when this area was first developed, told a story of having to sell his car to buy diesel fuel to put in his tractor. Now he farms 68,000 hectares, which is something over 150,000 acres. He plants that all 68,000 hectares to soybeans first, and then follows up with most of it in corn. Corn crop here is past tasseling. I would judge it as being late July, early August if we were in the North America, and they will begin harvesting soon. Corn crop looks good.
That's Gary Schnitke. He and the Farm Dog team are traveling across Brazil. If you'd like to catch up on their agricultural tour, you can do that on our website at willag.org. There is a link to a photo gallery there and a YouTube playlist. Yesterday, you heard on this program about the problems that farmers in North Dakota and other parts of the northwestern Corn Belt will be having as rain continues to fall there. We talked about that. And the prevent plant date of May 25 with North Dakota State University Extension agricultural economist Frayne Olson. I also asked him a general question about what farmers should do to make new crop sales and whether or not now they just simply needed to wait for the end of May, June rally if it comes.
That's the most likely. I mean, that's the most likely scenario that would give you a short-term price pop would be some other production problem, in particular, whether there's, you know, in your country where there's much higher concentration of corn as well as soybeans. If there's some weather issues that start showing up, if we get into a little bit drier condition, if we start having a lot of heat issues during pollination, you know, those are the typical things we look for a pop or rally in the corn market. And again, looking at those as pricing opportunities. Now, the challenge we have, of course, up here is what kind of yield do you plant? Do you budget in for your crop, for your marketing plan? And the advantage of waiting a little bit to like midsummer is that you do have a little better idea as the crop starts to develop what your yield potential is. So it becomes a little easier to start honing in on how much do I dare forward price. For better or worse, there are a lot of farmers because of their risk aversion, you know, they don't want to oversell. They do tend to wait until they know what the yields are going to be. So they put more focus and emphasis on post-harvest marketing plans rather than the pre-harvest ones. And, you know, sometimes that works, but a lot of times it gets them into more deeper trouble.
So how should they take advantage of what's available in the way of options and hedge markets and those sorts of things?
So from an option standpoint, I guess I might have a little bit different philosophy than some marketing folks. I look at options as being, you know, a pretty good short-term strategy. To try and use options for long-term price protection gets a bit tricky, mainly because you're looking at options contracts that have quite a bit of time value. A lot of farmers are hesitant to put the upfront money required for a longer-term options position. And so I guess what I recommend or what I look at is if you are looking at an option strategy of some type, think about those for a shorter time period, a very defined time period, and saying, look, what kind of event are you trying to capture from a price movement? Don't just put an option strategy on hoping prices will go up. I want to be very specific about what do you think would cause prices to increase or decrease? Give me a specific event that you're worried about, and let's put an option strategy around that particular event and think about the timing of it as well as the potential price movements. And so I usually look at an option strategy being something where you're targeting a specific event rather than trying to put in, well, I'm just going to protect against general price decreases or potential price increase.
So in this case, you would put something in, for instance, that would potentially reap a reward in the case of a drought or in the case of not a drought.
Correct.
Are there two strategies there?
There are.
Right, okay.
Yeah, there are.
And,
yeah.
and you would be short term. You would be short term so that you would be using expiration in when? September?
Well, so there's a couple of different strategies. My preference would be to use a December option, but we also have the short dated options that are available. And so, depending upon how you want to play this, and that's why I want to be, in my mind, an option strategy, just to reiterate, is wrapped around a specific kind of event. Because I want farmers to be very thoughtful about why do you think prices will go up or prices will go down? What is it that you're either worried about from a price decline standpoint? Let's put some protection on to be able to focus on that kind of an event. Because the issue with options is they have, we have the time value as well. Now, time value doesn't deteriorate very quickly when it's a long time left, but it does deteriorate very quickly as we get closer to expiration. And so what I'm looking for is something that we don't lose a lot of time value, but has the opportunity to increase because we have the price movement in the direction we expect, and we can pick up some additional money through the increase in volatility, the premium from the volatility portion of it. So I'm trying to maximize the potential revenues from the option and minimize the potential losses due to time value.
Brokers will, I have one other question here, and I don't know enough about these two, so you may have to explain.
But sure.
Brokers will use short-dated options, I think, in this case. Is that right?
Yes. So the reason for that is because this is new crop, we're looking at new crop pricing. I want to try and use a new crop month, which would be December, because the December contract on the future side will be the most responsive to a new crop problem. Does that make sense?
Well, that part makes sense to me, yes.
So think about this. So think about this. So if you September corn would really reflect old crop, December corn is going to reflect new crop. So why would you use a September contract to try and cover a new crop problem? Okay. Now, short-dated options, the advantage of short-dated options is they do tend, because of their short time period, their short window, they do tend to be more sensitive when you think about, because there's four pieces that cause an option, four different things that cause an option price to change. You've got the move in the underlying futures, the change in the volatility, so you want to buy it when things are quiet and sell it when things are really crazy. You've got the time value piece. And then you have interest rates. And the interest rate thing is basically rounding error in commodity options, grains. So really looking at three of them, okay? And what happens is as a traditional option gets closer to expiration, that time value disappears really fast. And so to try and trade an option just before expiration doesn't make a lot of sense, okay?
because you're going to lose that really fast. It accelerates as you get closer to the expiration date. So we want to have something that has some time value left, okay? Because then the thing that changes the premium, the two factors that change the premium, are really the movement, how much does the underlying futures go up or down, and how does the volatility increase or decrease. So the option premium is more sensitive to those two pieces, not as sensitive to the time value part. And a short dated option, because of that length of expiration, it loses some of that sensitivity. Let's put it that way. So they're a little bit cheaper. They don't have as much upfront cost. Farmers are a little more willing to try that. And they tend to be pretty sensitive to those two factors that we're really worried about.
Frayne Olson is an agricultural economist at North Dakota State University Extension. Yesterday afternoon, USDA released the weekly crop progress report. It shows around the nation that 49% of the corn crop has been planted. The rolling five-year average is 42%. 12% of that crop has emerged. The five-year average, 11%. 35% of the soybeans are in the ground. That's well ahead of the 25% rolling five-year average, and 9% of that crop has emerged compared to the 4% five-year average. 38% of the winter wheat has headed. The five-year average is 35%, and it's said to be in 25% good and 4% excellent condition. That's 1 percentage point worse than it was last week. Subsoil moistures around the nation are 57% adequate. 57% adequate. Last year at this time, they were 54% adequate. Don Day is now here from Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Don, let's cover the Midwest, but we'll start further into the Northwest, maybe into the prairies of Canada. Did they get much rainfall out of this last event? Has that helped? And then what do conditions look like for the rest of the planting season here?
Well, certainly, I mean, the big high pressure ridge that developed over the last couple of weeks extended deep into Canada, bringing unseasonably warm and dry weather conditions, as we know. They are getting a little bit of rain, but a lot of Manitoba and Saskatchewan and a good part of the key areas of Alberta, at least here for the next 5 to 7 days, the heavier moisture is going to stay on the other side of the border. Now, it's going to be close, but we're seeing significant rains that will be falling across North Dakota, Minnesota, South Dakota, portions of eastern Montana, but only a little bit of that rain between now and the weekend will be getting into southern Manitoba and Saskatchewan and to scattered showers in Alberta. So they need more.
So we talked yesterday with Frayne Olson at NDSU, North Dakota State University. They really need to get started there. Looks like the rainfall is going to probably keep them out of the field.
It is. It's going to be very wet. You know, right now they're enjoying a weather pattern that's really not all that bad. But once we get into Thursday through this weekend, widespread rains all across North Dakota into the Arrowhead of Minnesota will be taking place. So they are going to be facing delays. And we're looking at a lot of North Dakota picking up between 1 to 3 inches of rain.
In South Dakota and Nebraska, do they get the rain? And the western part of Iowa?
They do. Now, for South Dakota and Nebraska, they're going to see the best spring precipitation so far this season. Nebraska here in the last week has finally seen an uptick in some needed rain, but this rain that's coming will be widespread. Now, that will bleed over into Iowa, although I think the amounts of rain in Iowa won't be as heavy. But all of Iowa will be picking up measurable rain over the next week.
Just a note here that Kansas, Nebraska, the two Dakotas and parts of Minnesota have a prevent plant date of May 25 for corn. Iowa, parts of southern Minnesota, Illinois are later than that. What do conditions look like for the next 2 weeks in the primary growing regions across Iowa, Illinois, Indiana, into Ohio?
For the next week coming on up, the central and eastern corn belt is going to have some shower and thunderstorm activity, but nothing widespread. That changes next week. As we get into next week and the week after that, it looks wet. It looks like widespread areas of rain and showers and thunderstorms will spread into Iowa, Illinois, parts of Ohio, all of Missouri, eastern Kansas, eastern Oklahoma, then into the upper Midwest. It's generally speaking you know, it's not unusual in the month of May to see a pattern like this, but we are going to be looking at the next 10 to 14 days pretty wet for just about everybody.
Hey, thank you much. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Don Day is with Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Now let's turn our attention to the agricultural energies. Stephen Platt is here from Archer Financial Services. Hi, Steve. Thanks for being with us. Can you tell me about the crude oil market?
Really, this market's been pretty volatile, even though it hasn't moved a lot, at least from what you look at today. But crude oil and diesel made new lows last week for the move down to levels not seen since December of 21. Gasoline has held up much better, but has also been on the defensive as well. A lot of macroeconomic variables certainly at work on this market, both up and down. One thing is certainly the world economic outlook. The IMF released last month their outlook. They suggested a fall off in economic growth for 2023 to 2.8% as just the baseline, but suggested an alternative, which is probably what we're working under, a scenario of further financial stress to the global growth reaching only 2.5% this coming year. But the caveat is really the advanced economies, you know, the U.S. and Europe and those economies, which are big forces behind petroleum demand, where they're looking at growth under 1% this year. So really, we're stagnating in many of the areas that basically are big contributors to the demand side. One other thing that I'd like to mention is next month, we will also see the biofuel mandates coming out for 23 to 25 under the renewable fuel standard. You need to watch that. There's prospects for renewable diesel and sustainable aviation fuel to be included. EV credits had been talked about. It looks like they pulled back on that. So there might be a little bit more going to the renewables than maybe what had been considered.
Hey, thanks, Steve.
My pleasure. Have a great day.
You too. Stephen Platt is with Archer Financial Services. Joined us on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Media.